This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Baseball 17. Right now, the number one PC game on Metacritic as far as rating. Not the number one sports game, the number one game, period. As of May 1st, a Metacritic rating of 93 on the PC. And that's because, well, let's face it, Out of the Park 17 is the best baseball strategy game ever made. It lets you run every aspect of your club from either the front office and or in the dugout. It's fully licensed by Major League Baseball and the MLBPA, which means you've got all the authentic 2016 opening day rosters, plus all the real minor league guys. Plus, you've got every season ever from 1871 through 2015 with the Major League and the minor league teams. It's amazing. You can build your own custom baseball worlds. You can play solo. You can play in online leagues. There's so much that you can do with Out of the Park Baseball 17. You can get it today for $39.99 on the Mac, on the PC, on Linux. You can get it through Steam, or you can get it directly from ootpdevelopments.com. And if you use the code PRESS17, P-R-E-S-S-1-7, you will get an additional 10% off. So that is Out of the Park Baseball 17.
So there's a game rising the iOS and Android charts, and it's from the former creative director of the Madden NFL franchise. It's called Photo Finish Horse Racing, and creator Ian Cummings is here to talk about it in this episode of the Press Row Podcast presented by Hit the Pass. I'm Brian Wiedeye, your host, and along for the show as well is Rich Grisham from Out of the Park Developments, and of course previously hosted this podcast. Later on, we'll also be getting into initial reactions of the first news on Madden NFL 17. But first, Ian, it's great to have you on again. Rich talked to you on Press Row last September when your game was out under a different name, actually. But before we get to talking about Photo Finish specifically, just how have you been since then? How is life going for you?
Well, guys, it is great to be back. You know, I know you missed me. Sure. I know I'm a critical point in your broadcast and podcast, and so I'm just really happy to be here. It has been a wild ride, man. I mean, I had a baby girl.
That's great.
So River, she is a few months old now. She was born, 4 days after I was laid off from FanDuel. So that was a fun week.
Wow.
So yeah, it's been pretty wild ride. When I talked to Rich last time in September, I was working at FanDuel and had released Derby King on the side there. Mm-hmm. And after being, you know, let go, I've been able to go work on the game full time, and it's doing awesome.
That's excellent. Now, Rich, we talked just a few days ago, so I don't need an update from you, but still, thanks for coming on to discuss everything with us. And I think it's especially interesting because now you have a different perspective since that last interview you had with Ian, since you've spent time working with Out of the Park. You know, how has your views changed on kind of that whole development side of things in the last almost a year now?
Well, a different perspective, and even more, I don't want to say newfound respect, because I've always respected Ian from the minute I first met him and started talking to him and realized, you know, just how honest and open he is about all the good, the bad, and the ugly about, you know, the different things going on. But even more respect, because what Ian has done is he took what could have been a very difficult situation and not only turned it into something positive for himself, but positive for a few people, because Ian took a, as he just mentioned, a layoff from FanDuel and turned it into the creation of a video game studio. He's his own boss. He's got a couple of people now working on his team, and he's taken something that was a passion of his and turned it into a full-time career and something that is looks like a solid platform for growth. And as somebody who's spent, you know, 6 months now sort of working in the indie sports game space, both on PC and mobile, man, it is a great business, but it is a tough business. So to do what Ian has done is nothing short of amazing. So I'm just, you know, even more excited to talk to him tonight.
I'm blushing. You can't see me, but I'm blushing.
Well, Ian, here's your opportunity. Tell the audience about your game, Photo Finish Horse Racing. You know, what is it? What are you doing it? And why has it become so popular in the mobile space?
So the sort of like, you know, elevator pitch is that you are a horse racing owner, jockey, manager person. One of those things where you're sort of, you know, blending the line across all of them. But you start with a really crappy horse, and your goal is to train and breed and race your way to basically championship major races. So the simple task being that you start out on really easy, low-grade races. You win money for racing in those races, and you roll that money back into your horse and into your basically your stable, which makes the horses faster. You can breed faster horses after that, and it's just sort of an endless – well, it's not an endless. You can actually beat the game currently, but it's a long sort of long-term race to get to the highest level tier and win the highest level races.
So what made you actually decide on horse racing, and why did you see that as a game that kind of fit for mobile?
Yeah, so I get asked that a lot. You know, I get asked if I love horse racing, and I don't. I didn't really watch it ever. I didn't know any horses or jockeys or owners or anything. So I was approaching it as a casual fan, which I think maybe helped. But, you know, looking back in hindsight, when I made it, I had all these reasons why I did it. And, you know, they could have just as easily failed. But they ended up being a success. So the main things I was going after were kind of a few. But the first one being I have a limited skill set as an engineer. And so scope is a big deal for me. I can't make another football game to compete with Madden by myself. It's just too much stuff to do. And I've tried doing things where I've tried to make football games, I've tried to make soccer games, and eventually they fall flat because it's just like, I need someone to handle all the heavy tech lifting. So horse racing had always been in the back of my mind, a game that I thought I could do. And as I started getting better and better with the Unity game engine, I found assets that were out there for free that would kind of get me off the ground. There was an animated horse model on the asset store for free. So I was able to just kind of get some of that prototype stuff out of the way to see if there was maybe any fire there. And the other biggest thing was really just for the mobile devices. I mean, I've been working in mobile now for almost 5 years since I left EA. And one of the biggest things I've learned just as a mobile gamer as well as a developer is just the session has to be short and meaningful. And so it doesn't have to be. I shouldn't say that because there are plenty of games that have been successes that haven't been that way. But the games that I sort of gravitated towards and you know, ended up having longer kind of tail were the ones where I could do something while in line somewhere. I could do something in under a minute. And not that it had to be super awesome or fun, but it actually made progress. And so that was a big thing for me. Horse racing, okay, well, the longest, you know, they even call it the, you know, the 2 minutes in sports or whatever, the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. So that's like the longest race is 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I figured, okay, well, if we can make little sprint races that are 20 or 30 seconds and then have the long races that you sort of work your way towards, that would be a good fit for mobile. So all those things sort of summed up. And then the biggest other one was that, and the kind of deciding factor for me to move forward was that I didn't think anyone would compete with me. And that's being over self-confident as well as being sort of scared of the big guys. So when I looked at the current landscape on both Google Play and iOS, all of the horse racing games were terrible. And there were plenty, but they were awful. I mean, just really like laughable, right? So I thought, okay, well, I know I can beat that. And then, you know, I can make a game way more fun. I can make it have better presentation, better sound, all by myself. I knew I could do that. But I still, in the back of my head, thought there's no way EA or Zynga or Ubisoft or any big studio is going to come after horse racing because it's so niche. At least in the U.S., everyone just thinks it's dead. They don't even, it doesn't even register. And so for me, I thought, okay, well, this is sort of a perfect fit. It's niche. No one's going to try and compete with me. They don't think the business is good enough, but yet it is still very much a huge sport in the world. It is huge in Japan. It is huge in Australia. It's huge in the UK. But like sort of, it's just off everyone's radar because it hasn't quite, you know, it's been diving in the ratings. You know, every year it's gotten worse. It's lost 20 or 30% of its, you know, viewership and stuff. So it just felt like, okay, I'm going to make the stab here. If it's just one person, who cares if it doesn't make, you know, trillions of dollars? Like, EA would be so mad at the numbers that I first got. You know, they would have laid off everyone, or Zynga would have. But for me, it was like a world beater, you know. And, you know, all I wanted was just to be able to pay for a Unity license at the beginning, and for it to, like, kind of now steamroll into what it's doing now is it's still sort of amazing. I really don't believe it a lot of times.
You know, it, when you were explaining some of that, I was thinking to the show Shark Tank and how they'll, you know, entrepreneurs will come in with their businesses and they'll you know, a shark will say, you don't necessarily have something proprietary here. As soon as this big business notices you, they're just going to squash
you. They'll bury you. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of, I can see where you're coming from in that regard, especially if you tried to take on a sport that they're already doing or that they saw, you know, huge amounts of revenue potentially down the line in.
And the thing is now, like, sort of to that point, so now that, let's say that it's got this fire now, it's actually successful. If EA or Zynga or one of the big companies wants to, like, muscle me out, it's going to be really hard for them because I'm already way ahead of them. And
they could buy you out.
They could buy me out, which is always an option, of course.
Of course.
But, you know, I've got sort of that stranglehold now. So that's why I went for it. I mean, I looked at what EA and Zynga and all these kind of studios have been doing in mobile, where they try to knock off the big dog. They try to knock off Clash of Clans or Candy Crush. And I always saw that as just a huge losing strategy because it's just so hard. They're already way out in front, and they're adding features every day with huge teams that know what they're doing. So it's just a tough, like, thing to go follow the leader in mobile. And so that's why I went, you know, way off on my own. And I didn't think it would do what it's doing, but obviously I did have a strategy.
The thing that I found so interesting also was there hadn't been a Triple Crown winner in 30 years or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is, I mean, it had nothing to do with the success of the game, but I think it had everything to do with giving your game an even bigger lift. Because when American Pharoah was going for the Triple Crown and then won the Triple Crown, that increased the awareness of horse racing, I think, tenfold in the United States and around the world, which I got to believe, I mean, you could not have planned that any better, Ian, but I mean, I got to believe that also gave you a little bit of a boost.
I don't know.
All that.
I mean, obviously, you would think that helps. That would definitely be the assumption, but, like, my game was not out by the Triple Crown, which totally bummed me out. I was so mad at myself that, you know, I had been working on it and I was going to submit, and there was, like, a Unity upgrade and I didn't make it out. And sure enough, he wins a freaking Triple Crown. And I thought, oh man, if I'd been out right there, I would have been at the top of the charts, you know. But the sport died immediately after that. I mean, no one cares about American Pharoah anymore, other than people in the horse racing industry that pay $1.5 million to go breed with them or whatever, you know.
Did the Kentucky Derby just recently? Did you notice an uptick in interest in searching in searches for your game or anything like that?
So it's hard to say. So we signed a deal with Tilting Point, which is a mobile game publisher, So they basically started advertising and user kind of acquisition spend right around the same time. So it's hard for me to say if the Derby was actually the thing that mattered. But we obviously have climbed to the top of the charts out of basically nowhere since we've started doing that, since we started marketing. It can't hurt. I mean, that's why we did it. That's why we chose to do it around the Derby weekend. And like you saw, and if you read the article that I did with Owen on Polygon, it was just sort of the hope being that you're sitting there on the couch, you notice on your DVR that the Kentucky Derby is on for whatever reason, because you don't care about horse racing, and you think to yourself, hey, I wonder if there's a horse racing game, you know, and you type it into your phone and we're number one, you know? So that was definitely the hope. But I think with just the kind of, once it caught fire over the weekend, it's now the number one racing game in the UK. And so that feeds on itself. You know, once you get into those areas, now there's just tons of people in the UK every day just browsing the charts, right? So it's hard to, like, attribute that to say, well, we get a huge uptick from the Derby, because there's no way for me to tell, like, did they search for the Kentucky Derby? But I sure would assume that we got a little bit of a lift from being the topical winner kind of right there. And, you know, again, like, I want all of that stuff to happen. I want Nyquist to win the Triple Crown, right? Because I know that would definitely help, as Rich said. But I just, it's hard to say for sure because I just don't know if the sport is that big anymore.
you know, tracking is such an integral part of being able to understand how your game is doing. And while you can certainly put in some analytics that are easy, right? And there's a lot that still, with all of the tools that you have to measure how people are discovering your game, how many people click on a link, how many people ultimately convert, there's still a lot of ambiguity that you sometimes have no idea why this week, you know, the numbers for views on your game went up by 19%, and last week they were down 18%. It's funny. How have you used analytics? I'm curious to measure, chart, and track and determine how certain things may or may not be working.
That's a good question. So, I mean, when I left EA, I went to a startup that was called Rochambeau, and we were kind of split down the middle. Half of us were making games, and the other half were making analytics technology. So I've been really into analytics since I left EA, and we were even doing some pretty neat stuff there at EA, tracking what plays people were calling and random things like that. But I think the hardest part, so there's two kind of theories I have. Number one is that you can lose a lot of soul in your game when you go purely analytics. And I think Zynga has lost a lot of that. You know, when you see a game that's engineered purely on revenue, you can tell. You can tell when they're squeezing you. You know, you can feel it, and it doesn't feel good. And a sort of my other sort of thought there is that analytics and all those sort of extra things can obviously make a revenue lift, but the game's got to be sort of set up right ahead of time. Like, you're going to get maybe extra 10 or 20% of the kind of squeeze based on the analytics and reading what your players are doing. So there's still like a lot of design art that I do like to think is there. It's not just all about, you know, measuring your metrics every day and kind of pivoting towards what you think is happening. And I think the other thing that's sort of, just like what you mentioned, is so hard to understand and track is that I actually saw a report. It was on Twitter, so I don't know the source yet, and they haven't sourced it yet. Which was something like, of an iOS game of the typical iOS game, like if you get featuring by Apple, like something like 5% of your downloads come from that, and another 10% come from search, and then the rest are all word of mouth. There's just some insane number, you know. That is just like your friend. The only way you're going to grow on the App Store is if your friend tells you to get it. And, you know, a few of my buddies and I, we've had this theory that all of the growth in the App Store has come from school kids telling them their friends, check out this game. So if you think about all the games that have hit, they're just kind of like viral, weird things that have climbed up to the top of the charts. Now, this is just downloads. Now, like, obviously, Clash of Clans and the Game of War and all those games are making tons of money, and their marketing teams can spend to get Liam Neeson or whoever and Arnold Schwarzenegger. But the other games that just shoot up are based on people, and I think high school kids telling their friends what to check out. The Flappy Birds, there's currently a lot of Donald Trump games on the top of the charts. Of course, you know, it's just like that. So it changes your whole mindset of making a game too, of like, okay, well, you don't want to say like, well, how do I appeal to kids? You know, how do I appeal? Cause I'm old. I'm like in my 30s. How am I going to appeal to teenagers? Like, I hate to feel, is there any way to feel more square than like start thinking about that? You know? So what are the high school kids like right now? Like, yeah. do they like Taylor Swift? Should we put Taylor Swift in the game? You know, like, you just feel like a total old fart, but yeah, so, anyway, the long story or answer to that is word of mouth is everything for mobile growth, at least that I've seen. And so even all the tracking in the world, you don't know when someone just goes to the App Store and searches, you know, or types in directly photo finish or whatever. There's no way to even figure out where the hell that came from.
That gets to kind of the next thing I was going to ask about, which is obviously with mobile... the way games are marketed, or if they're marketed at all, very different than how Madden was marketed, right? So how do you generate awareness for a game when there's, I don't know, I'll estimate 30 billion games in the App Store. There's like, I believe the actual number is like 20 games for every human on the earth. How do you separate yourself from that crowd and reach people who might actually be interested in it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's like 10,000 games a day go live or something, or 10,000 apps a day. I mean, it's crazy, right? And that's why so many, and no one's figured it out. Again, my strategy, which could have easily failed, was to go for something that was real, like horse racing, that had fans and had viewers, because I thought that there would just be people randomly that would search for it. Like, I don't have when I started, I didn't have any marketing budget. In our space, unlike Madden or console space, you know, we have to do directly targeted, very specific advertising, usually through Facebook or Instagram or something where that platform knows everything about the user that you're targeting to. So I can't go put a TV campaign together that costs $3 million that shows the game, because that might get 50 people to install it, you know. Game of War and Clash of Clans can do that because they have insane amounts of money. And they know that the people that they get will make that. But we have to be super targeted. So, I mean, if you've never run a Facebook ad campaign before, it's totally mind-boggling and eye-opening that you realize that you are Facebook's product, you know. Mm-hmm. We are the product of Facebook. And so when I go to create an ad, I can target it all the way to people that like horse racing, that, you know, like the Kentucky Derby, or they like Nyquist, or they like whatever, or they've searched for it before, or, you know, the behavior tracking is insane. And so I know that if I put an ad in front of someone, it's going to be very successful if they install the game, right? And so going for a niche like I did is even better, because no one else is advertising to horse racing fans, because the sport is dead. there's no Sports Illustrated, you know, ads that they're trying to serve to horse racing fans. There's no, you know, it's like maybe Horse and Hound or something. I don't know. There's just not much out there. So if I was making a baseball game, that'd be much harder, because there's tons of people advertising to baseball fans.
That is true, sir. It's very true.
Rich knows this.
Yeah. So when I set out, you know, and I told Owen in the article as well, like, I had first thought about tennis, just a sort of a similar thing. Like, tennis is a huge sport everywhere, but it's not really at the top of everyone's list, you know. But I also thought, well, that was going to be a harder game to make, and it was also a little bit less niche than horse racing.
Is licensing a consideration there, that you didn't really have to worry about it with horse racing, whereas with tennis, maybe people are looking for the certain, you know, the Grand Slam events, or they're looking for certain tennis personalities to actually appear in the game?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, that's definitely an item to worry about, because horses are faceless and nameless or whatever, and jockeys are pretty much too. I mean, I really wanted to have the actual, you know, the Triple Crown races in my game at least, but it was just like I couldn't even get anyone to return my calls or emails, you know. So I just went with generic, and it hasn't seemed to matter that much. But you can get to the part of why it used to be called Derby King, and it's not, yeah, if you wanted to. But yeah, so I did at least get noticed by Churchill Downs, who told me to take the word Derby out of the name, which I thought was kind of lame, but whatever.
Well, your game had gotten to the point where it was noticed.
Yeah, right. I thought, well, that's a good thing, that there's some people in some boardroom somewhere.
These guys
with suits on. The guy's got a PowerPoint. Now, listen, everyone. There's some guy out there making $4 a day off of our name. You know, let's shut him down. And so they, you know, cease and desist and angry phone call. But yeah, so that was random but weird.
You know, I've noticed with sports games on mobile, what you generally see now is not the gameplay heavy things that they started with when they first, when mobile gaming really started to get big, it was, hey, we're going to try to put almost like a console experience on your mobile phone. And you know what? That just doesn't work. It's not going to translate the way, you know, you're not going to be able to bring over a game that you play with a controller on your 60-inch TV and have it on your phone and work properly. So what you see now are these card battle games or team building games based off the Ultimate Team concept, and that's all free to play. So how do you approach, number one, how do you approach your gameplay, which you mentioned it has to be quick, which I agree with personally, because I don't have much patience when I'm playing on my phone. But also, how do you integrate the ability to create revenue, which obviously you need to exist, and to continue to improve the game and all that. And how do you balance that with, you know, making it a satisfying game just as a whole?
Yeah, it's really hard because, I mean, geez, I don't know, 10 plus years of all I did all the time at EA and on Madden was just try to think of new cool things to add or to, you know, listen to what the fans wanted and add what they wanted. And so it's a pretty tough kind of mental switch where you're sitting there like, okay, this is going to annoy people. You know, how much do I want to annoy them in order to, you know, make this thing viable? And so that is tough. And a lot of people don't do it. And when I think about Rochambeau, at our startup, we just didn't do it. We just said, you know what, we're not going to be that studio. We're going to make people pay money because they think the game's awesome. And there are games that have done that well, like League of Legends, I think, is a pretty good example of, they don't really annoy the crap out of you with money. It's just that it's going to be a cooler experience.
But, yeah, I would say, you know, what they do is they make their fans so excited about the game and enjoy the game so much that the people are happy to give them money is how, I mean, at least that's my take on it.
That's the only time I've ever put money into games on mobile is when I want to reward them. You know, it's rare, but it's also rare. Any of those mobile games becoming successful is so rare. So the idea that, you know, I found a game that's giving me enjoyment, I want to reward the developers and the people behind it so that it encourages more of that to happen, more of those type of games to be produced, you know, and you hope that's what other people are doing, but then you find
out. But it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way. Like one of the games that came out last year, Score Hero, is one of my favorite mobile games. Soccer game where you just really nice swipe controls to kind of draw.
It's so good.
Yeah, where you draw where the ball is going to go. And based off of, they've had an engine for 4 or 5 years now that I've always really liked. And they had a Score World Goals game that I always loved. It was really good. But so that game I've actually just pumped in, I don't know, maybe $50 to over the course of playing it, which is still not like what I'm going to pay for Uncharted, you know, or anything. But it's the same thing, though. I was sort of like you. Hey, these guys are doing a good job. You know, I'm just going to kind of give them the money because I'm really enjoying it. But that's just a blip. You know, there's some guy somewhere that's given them $50,000, you know, like on doing rewinds on every shot or whatever he was doing. So it's no matter what, the whales and the kind of obsessive behavior will win out over sort of, hey, let's just make this game fun. Unfortunately, there's a balance again. Like the PC games have a little more wiggle room, but mobile right now, I mean, it's just got to be a free game, and you've got to catch the people that are really, really into it and make sure that they can, you know, spend and be rewarded. Like, it doesn't have to be about tricking them or about screwing them over, but it's just, for me, the balance is about time and content. And that just seems to be where it has sort of netted out right now in the industry where it is, that you can wait for something to finish, or you can, you know, photo finish, for example, if you need to upgrade your horse at a really high level, it's going to take 10 minutes. And you can just pay your way through that if you don't want to wait, or you can just wait. Or you can watch an ad. You know, there's just like, so there's that sort of stuff. And then content is the other one. Just like, for example, on Halloween, I sold a pumpkin head, like a jockey pumpkin head, you know, just something random that if you don't want to pay, then don't pay. You know, who cares? But if you're into it, you're into it. So those are sort of the the tricky ones. But like what you said, though, balancing is really tough. Like for ads is a pretty good, you know, maybe 25-30% of your revenue. It can be more if you ratchet it up. And so there's that thought of like, well, okay, how often do I show an ad? Do I force show an ad? Do I, you know, because if I just show an ad after every race, people are going to bail, but maybe they'll hang, maybe they won't, you know, maybe they'll hang in there.
You find out in the reviews, right?
Yeah. You find out in the metrics, you find out in your rev, and you're like, well, okay, I lost 20% of the users, but I made 30% revenue. I don't know. You know, so, but I mean, at least with my background, I tend to lean towards the user experience more because I also don't have to squeeze every penny out of everyone. Like if I'm leaving money on the table, that's not a, you know, fireable offense. Whereas if that's the case at Zynga or EA, where you're this massive company with massive overhead, you have to make a lot more money off your game than I do, obviously. So,
you know, it's interesting. You talk about the notion of people just expect free games now. You know, MLB Manager 2016, which is the mobile version of Out of the Park Baseball, is a $5 game. And what's been fascinating is you watch the trends. The game does pretty well, relatively speaking, but there's definitely seems to be almost a stigma with games that you pay for now in the mobile space.
Oh yeah.
And you know, as we look at that franchise, you know, which is an extension of Out of the Park, and we, you know, over the course of the next 3 to 5 years, you know, when you watch, you know, the trends in the industry and what's successful and what's not, you think to yourself, okay, well, you know, what do we do to get the most people to be interested in the game, yet not, like to Brian's point, you know, we don't want to turn MLB Manager, which is very popular with a group of people who get it every year and play it and expect, okay, I'm going to pay $4 or $5, but I'm going to get, you know, to play a true baseball management sim, which is a pretty significant undertaking.
Yeah.
You know, if you change the business model on that, you risk alienating the thousands and thousands of people who like it, but then you potentially open it up to a whole new group of people that, let's face it, for the most part, people who are interested in mobile games see $5, and to them, $5 is actually $10,000.
Yeah, it's right? It's insane. It's insurmountable. Like you would never, you just go drop that on a coffee without
exactly.
Even thinking about it.
You can't walk into a Starbucks without them taking $5 out of your hand. Yeah. But $5 in the mobile space is just this massive barrier.
Yeah.
No matter how in depth your game is, it's a fascinating thing to participate in.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it's a race to the bottom. I mean, there's a million developers out there like me that are okay with making smaller amounts of money. And, you know, there's college kids out there that if their game made $15,000, they would be the happiest person in the world, you know. And so they're happy to give away tons of user experience. I mean, that's kind of the way you have to look at it. Like, if you go play a game that gives you hours and hours of content for free, and it's super fun, and you only saw a few ads, it's really hard to say, all right, well, I'll pay $5 for this other game that I'm not really sure about, or I don't know anything about, you know, it's just because everyone else has made all these really great games for free. People that put out paid games on, mobile, you know, all power to you, but I can't believe it. I mean, especially with Android, like as soon as it gets cracked, you basically are dead. You know, there's people just email the APK to each other. And I don't see, like, I look at the best story of that is Threes, which I don't know if you guys have followed.
But, oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, they put out the game at whatever, $2, a paltry amount, $2 or $3. And within 2 weeks it's cloned and put out free and they just buried them, you know, and their game was so superior. I mean, that Threes game is so good and it didn't matter. And so that was like number one lesson there for me. Like, never try and make a premium game on mobile. Away. I mean, I would like have killed myself if I was those guys. You know, they still probably made plenty of money or whatever, but that was like crushing. They had the hit. They had the best game of the year that year, and they just got totally undercut, you know. So,
of course, when you're writing a check of a substantial amount to the Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association to try to put something out for free and have no idea whether you're going to get even enough money to cover your license costs is a whole other.
That's very hard. But I mean, look at look at Madden. You know, Madden is the best example of it. That, you know, for years and years it was premium. For years and years it was the full game. You know, you played all the positions and the defense and offense, and it's just overtime. You know,
it was a terrible game though. Let's
terrible. But like, finally, you know, they start getting into this thing of like, okay, we have to stop listening to the hardcore guys. Like what you're saying, you've got this loyal sect that will pay the $5, but that's shrinking every year. And then now Madden makes, I don't know, probably $200,000 a day or something.
A lot of money.
You know? So it's just like, you have to rip that Band-Aid off in mobile sometimes, Rich. Sorry, man.
You know, you've obviously learned a lot since you started this whole project, Ian. I'm curious, since you talked to Rich last year, you know, how have you applied that to the game? What's actually changed with the game since then?
I think the biggest thing really has been the addition of the two employees, right?
Yeah.
Which are basically my co-founders now. We're hoping to not have a employee-employer thing. But, you know, I'm not an artist and I'm not a programmer. I'm just sort of a crappy version of everything. And Brian is an amazing art director and artist. And Paul is an amazing technical, you know, engineer. And so since we've sort of staffed up the real people, like the polish level has just gone through the roof. And those sort of things make such a huge difference on mobile, I personally think. To stand out in that big sea of the, you know, like we said, the 10,000 apps a day, the game has to feel good when you boot it right up. And I felt like mine before was sort of a pet project, and it felt like a student game, you know, and it sort of got its point across. But now it's like up there in the professional level. It's got the right tuning. It's got the right frame rate. You know, it runs on low-end devices. It's just kind of got all those checkboxes filled. And so that's probably the biggest thing that I've been able to do since we last talked. I mean, I just limped the product out when I talked to Rich. You know, it was like the bare minimum. Does this idea work? And so since then, you know, it's been just a constant iteration of, okay, this works, take it out. Or, you know, do more of that. This doesn't work. Take it out. You know, especially with having the manpower of talented people.
So. I mean, you nailed it, Ian. There is nothing like having a team of people that take something that you have as an idea and can actually transform it into something much better, right? Like, you know, I look at what we're doing, you know, with Out of the Park. It's not me. It's actually six of us. And all of the different people have very different responsibilities and strengths. You know, you look at TJ, who's the community manager for Out of the Park Baseball, very specific thing. He does the Twitch streams and he's in the forums and he's, you know, he's doing what TJ does for the community, and it's been incredibly well received. Then Adam doing the same thing with Franchise Hockey Manager as a community manager. And then you got Ryan Lewis, who is a, you know, just a, he, for my money, he's the best, you know, visual designer in the business. You got Corey, who is excellent at the digital strategy and working on, you know, helping coordinate with all the different partners that we have. You know, and then there's me, who just, you know, works with various partners and with the guys making the game and coordinates and runs it. You realize there's nothing like a good team to take you from here to there, where, you know, here is a guy in a garage and there is an actual functional organization that can do things that you couldn't do on your own. It's been amazing to watch how you have been able to, like you say, just take something that you did that was good, but with the right people that have the right skills and putting them together, what you can accomplish is unbelievable. Starting your own studio and bringing those guys together and making this happen, it has to be one of the most gratifying things ever in your life, I would imagine, other than, you know, your kids, has to be right up there at the top. But it also, frankly, along with just right there with your kids, has to be really terrifying at times too, right? Because this whole thing is happening because of you, and that's awesome. But it's also like, whoa, hold on a second. If this goes wrong, I got to get out of town.
it's been super stressful. I mean, up until basically last week, we didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I had enough money to pay us till June 1st. And, you know, if it was a big dud on the Derby weekend, then it was like, well, all right, guys, well, go search for jobs. You know, and I was just dreading that thought, that conversation, that, you know, I've been really trying to be super transparent with them, and make sure that we're all kind of in it together, as opposed to like, you know, being whatever secretive or any of that stuff. But it's, yeah, I mean, the whole point there, the team is obviously everything, but starting a studio and starting a business, have been such a drag. And, you know, as you might expect, I just love making games. I love writing code. I love tuning gameplay mechanics, you know. And when it comes to, like, filing taxes.
Oh, my gosh.
Running budgets and all that.
Oh, my gosh.
As you would imagine, it's the worst thing in the world, you know.
And creating an LLC and having to go to your accountant and having him yell at you because you're not doing things right.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and then you're like, oh, my gosh, I've got revenue coming in. That means I have to pay taxes. But that's not till next year. Next year, that's, like, so far away. But then you realize, oh, my gosh, that's actually, like, 2 weeks from now. What am I supposed to do? And pay, oh, my God, payroll. Whoever thought payroll. We were going to be making payroll? Are you kidding me? That's not, like, for us. It's crazy.
I basically just pay monthly payments for everyone to do all that stuff. I pay ADP to do payroll. I pay an accountant to do the taxes. I pay a lawyer to do the LLC stuff. Because I just know that if I didn't, I would blow it and just blow the whole thing up, you know. Like, there was there was one day I got this tube in the mail, like a cardboard tube.
I hate those.
From Florida something.
Not good.
And I unroll it, and it's the huge poster of, like, the lady in the cast.
Yeah. It's like, wait, do I put this up in my bathroom?
In my house.
In my garage? Like, where does this go? Nobody works here but me.
Yeah, right. It was like the workers' comp lady. I'm like, what? Okay, I guess I'll just put this up somewhere in the garage. But yeah, so that part has been a real drag. And now, like, getting through all of that, though, and I've actually been kind of reaching out to random buddies and indie developers. Like, now that I'm through all that, that's such a nice asset for me to have. It sucked to get through, and it's still very stressful to have, you know, money and payroll and all those things. But now for someone, if they had a game, you know, like a friend of mine, if they were making another photo finish, you know, if they were making a side project game, I'd publish it for them, you know, that's sort of just so they don't have to worry about any of that crap. So that's what I've been trying to kind of spin up. Any of my friends that are kind of making games on the side, like trying to get that going, because I want to also just, you know, I don't want to be like a huge studio. I want to be an indie shop, you know, that's sort of the end goal for me.
It is kind of amazing once you get a taste for it, though. And I would imagine, Ian, there has been a time in the not too distant past where you said, well, this is what I'm doing now. I'm not going back. You can't make me go back. I am not going back. I'm my own boss. I run my own company. There's no better feeling than that. And while it can be difficult and challenging, I bet you now that you've gotten that taste, this is what you're going to do, right?
Oh, yeah. There's no way. Absolutely no way. I mean, FanDuel closed, you know, and I'm kind of sitting there with no job, and like EA is right down the street, you know, and I get hit up from an EA recruiter that day, and I'm just like, forget it, man. No way. I cannot do that. Like, I blame so many of the failures of all the last few years on bosses, you know, and so I have to just kind of be able to take that myself now and say, all right, it's all up to you, and if you fail, at least it's on you. You know.
So I got to ask you this. What certain things have you been confronted with that you've said, you know what, because of some specific experience you've had with a previous boss or previous, you know, corporate decision, you know, is there anything that you can point to where, like, you could either go here or there, A or B, and you did something because of it was something that you would have done differently, you know, when you were on the other side of that decision?
Yeah, without trying to give away too much and get myself in trouble, but I think the biggest thing is speed. You know, the thing that's just driven me crazy about, you know, anytime you're in kind of a corporate structure is you can't just move on anything. You know, you just can't just do it. This horse racing idea would never have gotten through anywhere. And even though it's got its problems in terms of, you know, how much money it could make, it's still going to be a successful game, more successful than many of the games that I've worked on. And so that sort of notion of, like, here's the plan, and we know the problems, and let's just start working, you know, and let's see if there's some fire, you know. Like, it only took a couple of months for me to get the game out into the Philippines, right? And 2 months to get a game out to see if there's a spark, right? And no one does that. Like, I don't believe it. I can't tell you how many meetings I've been in at all these other companies that's like, we need to fail faster and try new ideas. And they never do any of it, you know. There was, like, I don't know, 2 years ago, an article in the Orlando paper about how Tiburon's, you know, making new IP and they're going to have a big game jam. Mm. And it's like, weird. I haven't heard anything since then, you know. So there's just like, there's all these, the right sentiment, but because you're so big, you know, it's not really easy to blame anyone. There's just no one moves on it.
Well,
because there's so many people that can say no in the chain, right? When there's 20 people in a boardroom, all it takes is one guy like, I don't know, horse racing, we're really going to do that? You know, and then everyone says, yeah, you're right, you know.
Well, I mean, it all comes down to the way that most companies are run these days, right? Which is, I'm not saying it's a wrong thing, right? It's just like, okay, if you want to do something, you have to tie revenue to it, or it needs to go into a bucket of R&D. But even if it goes in the bucket of R&D, at a certain point in time, it has to generate revenue. If you can't tie revenue to a, you know, particular action, it's just almost impossible to make something happen. When you get into any, I mean, public companies especially, but even, you know, private equity controlled companies, sometimes it's even harder to get new things done and to get innovation because, you know, the people, when you're in a private equity situation, they're typically looking for exits in 3, 5, or 7 years, right? So they're trying to maximize what they've got as opposed to go in for the long run. And again, I'm not saying that's wrong. It's frankly, you know, one of the main engines of our economy. But in the video game space, it makes it extremely difficult to innovate. And, you know, we see the result of that everywhere we look.
Yeah, it is why we're in the place we're in, right? That all the innovation is happening on mobile with teams of 3 and 5 people, you know. And it's not to say that the games that they're making at EA or Activision or whatever are bad.
I agree. I think they're good.
They're getting better and better because they're figuring out what they're doing. But it's just so hard to take a risk when you're that big. And I don't know, if I owned EA or if I owned wherever, if I was a CEO, I would just be like, here's 20 people, like an insignificant thing. And you guys all split into teams of 3 and you go make fun, quick games. Mm. And that's what Supercell is still doing. And they just put out Clash Royale that's going to make another, I don't know, $3 billion, you know. And so I still don't get why that can't happen. I don't get why that didn't happen at Zynga either. I don't get why it doesn't happen at EA. EA's got a super successful mobile business. But
I was
going to
say,
like,
it kind of does, right? I mean, EA's mobile is just killing it.
But don't you think they could kill it more? You know, like, why don't they have something that's competing with Clash? You know,
well,
they're the best, right? They've got everything. They've got all the people. They got all the talent. They got all the tech. You know,
I mean, it's almost, and I trust me, I'm by no means an expert on EA's mobile business, but it feels to me like what they've done is they've. Yeah, and Ian, you know, these guys are really good at what they do at the senior executive level. It seems like they have said, okay, you know, they've created 20 or 30 IPs and they open them up and then close them down pretty quickly. And they're just like, they're in a situation where between The Simpsons Tapped Out and The Sims mobile games and their sports mobile games, instead of creating a whole bunch of new ones, they're just consistently iterating and updating and modifying and adding new stuff to their existing games because they found this formula that works. And I don't even mean that in a cynical way. Like, I have a few friends who played Simpsons Tapped Out like crazy. It is their game. It's not their favorite game. It's their game. It's what they play. And I'm like, really? That game's like 4 years old. They're like, what are you talking about? Like, every month it's a completely new experience. I'm like, wow, okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, that's what EA has done for years, is to sequelize and iterate and make successful properties, right? But again, that's, again, sort of back to the point of the innovation doesn't come from EA,
right?
Obviously,
right.
They've got Star Wars, and they're gonna make kick-ass Star Wars stuff.
There's your innovation right there. Yeah, boom,
that's new innovation. We got a better license than you, and it's like, yeah, it's awesome. Like, I'm not going to hate on Star Wars. It's the best, you know? So it's just that it's a different world. And that's why when you look back, like the things that I like or I enjoy doing, they don't match with what EA does anymore, you know, which is trying new things. So
it's funny. I literally just got a notification, Ian, that my horse, irregular maintenance, his stamina has recovered and he's ready.
Is that a generated one or did you make that up?
No, I made that one.
Yeah. I got a generated one today that was internal razor. I was like, oh.
It sounds a little brutal.
I know. I need to change that up.
That's almost like when I've seen you post on Twitter or when I've seen other people post, that's almost the most fun thing about it is like sharing your horse name and like coming up with new horse names, kind of fun. So check it out. It's Photo Finish Horse Racing, iOS and Android. I'll drop links in the podcast posts and everything, or search it on Google. Try it out. It's free to play. It's a lot of fun. I've been playing it recently, so make sure to check that out. But since I've got you here, Ian, there is an opportunity to talk about Madden. And I'm curious, before we go into the news that just came out, is it still surreal for you to kind of be on the outside and see things like cover announcements and feature rollouts and stuff like that?
Man, I'm trying to think of not like sounding like a jerk, but I hate to say I could care less, but it's definitely like, it's nice to not have to worry about it. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to even get jazzed or care because it's just so like burned, gone. It's so much in the past now. Of like, it feels like an ancient ages ago that I had to fly to New York to, you know, do some draft thing and talk about the cover announcement or whatever. Mm. So it isn't surreal anymore because I barely pay attention to it, I guess.
So we've got some features for the game, right? So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on maybe the direction they're going and what do you think about
some of
the stuff?
I did read up today as I knew I was coming on this podcast. I was like, I can't seem like a total rube, but I did study up today. I did study, yeah.
Yeah, so some of the things that have been announced, we got a vague mention about franchise mode. We don't have specifics on it yet, but they have a renewed focus on franchise mode, which is encouraging at least to hear because it's been a few years since they've done much there. They're adding in new ball carrier feedback cues and special moves, which is not unusual since they've done that for other positions in the last few years, whether it's defensive backs and wide receivers or defensive linemen.
Yep.
You know, icons popping up above heads. You've got tackle cones. You've got all this stuff. They're trying to give people accommodate people who are not as experienced with the game or give them some help along the way because it's still a very difficult game to learn and it's not accessible to people who are new to it necessarily. They're implementing an innovative and authentic defensive AI system, which sounds really heavy and probably will be until we see it in action. And then the one that really hits for me though is, and I'm sure you know this, Ian, because we've talked special teams before, they're actually doing stuff on special teams, a more challenging kick meter. You're going to be able to ice kickers. They're adding special teams trick plays, and then they're adding a block kick mechanic. So this is stuff that generally you haven't been able to do for the most part. You haven't been able to block kicks or punts.
Yep.
Kicks, field goals have been money for years and years, and maybe that'll still end up being the case. But you look at right. Kicking in the NFL last year, missed extra points affected a lot of games, and that just hadn't happened in Madden. So of those things, you know, what kind of stands out to you and what does it say to you about what they're doing with Madden this year?
I mean, I like the team that's there now for sure. I mean, I love this. Anytime that they're just going to say we're working on gameplay, like I'm in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always just sort of skeptical of mechanics as part of that, you know. And I've mentioned that for years. Even the first time I talked with Rich, just sort of, you know, we're going to add all these new controls and then we're probably going to throw them away in a couple of years. You know, like that sort of cycle.
That was prescient, by the way. That was extremely prescient because that was exactly what happened.
Yeah, of course, because you run out of buttons, you know, and you have to do something new. And again, that just sort of that difference of FIFA doesn't seem to be doing that. You know, they just seem to just keep focusing on this like really solid And now Pro Evo the same way. It's just, it's not about like,
so good. I'm so glad he said Pro Evo. Yeah. I have to get in my Pro Evo mention every week.
MLB the show's similar in that sense also.
Right. It's not about like a million new triggers and because you can't, it's hard to kind of say in the same breath that we're adding new things for people to learn because the game's so inaccessible. So we've added all these things to show you, but while also saying, and we added, you know, all new specific trigger pull jukes and all these other things. It's just, and I don't know what, I still don't know where that's coming from. Like, why is that push there? And, you know, why can't, at this point, Madden is such a pop culture stalwart. Why do they have to do those things when they could just really say, you know what, this is the most authentic football game you'll ever see in your whole freaking life, you know? And every animation is perfect, and the physics is perfect, and just shut up. You know, that's it. And it seems like the hardcore community would flip out, and the guys that don't know how to play it, whatever. I mean, I already saw, like, I can't remember which Madden team member I saw, like, it got retweeted within minutes of them launching that he's like, don't worry, you can turn all this stuff off, you know, and all. You know, I'm like, God, I just immediately felt so bad, like, because that's exactly what I had to do. Every time you're doing something, you're like, oh, don't worry, hardcore fans, you know, it's not that bad, I promise, you know. So it's just such a, it's such a tough spot that I don't see, I mean, it's just weird to me that they haven't broken out of that. They're like, they've got this direction of tons of great gameplay features, so it's like, great, I love that. You know, but so then I just, it's always sort of weird with it's juxtaposed with these, like, and we've made a million new icons that show up and a new block kick mechanic and a new ice kicker mechanic and a new probably SWAT mechanic and a new 8 zone coverage mechanic. You know, you're like, wait a minute, what? It's just, I don't know. I don't know what the kind of hamster wheel is there.
Well, you know? Let me ask you a question, right? So with your horse racing game, it feels to me it's more like a platform than it is a individual game. Whereas Madden is not a platform. It is every year is a new release. And I get the sense, and same thing with Out of the Park, right? Like everybody who knows anything about your game wants to know every year what's new, what's new, what's new. Mm-hmm. I am in the radical minority with sports games, and I've talked about this in the past. I think I know I've said it. I'm almost scared every year of what's new in Madden what's new in MLB The Show.
Don't break it.
Don't, because I enjoy the game so much.
Rich, it would be like them saying we put a renewed focus on franchise mode, but because of that, we don't have online franchise anymore, right?
It's right. It's like, oh my God, no, don't do that. If anything, don't do that. You know what I mean?
All right.
But, I mean, I'm in the radical minority with MLB The Show. I don't want him to change anything with Pro Evolution. I don't want him. I mean, I want to see improvements.
Refinements.
But there's a difference.
You want refinements, yeah.
There's a huge difference between something new and something that is refined, especially when you've got a mature game and a mature engine. Out of the Park Baseball is very mature. Madden is very mature. MLB The Show is very mature. All of these games have been built on technology that has been refined and dare I say, perfected, or if not perfected, certainly maximized over the course of time. However, that, I got to believe it, and you're much closer to it than I am, because I mean, you worked for, you know, a $1 billion corporation. I'm working with a small indie sports game. Like, you guys have to know that if you don't say this is new, the feedback will be so much more negative than if you say we just have a whole bunch of cool refinements that'll just make the game better, right? I mean, that has to come from knowing your audience, which is why it's all the terminology. That's what I would think.
It is, for sure. I mean, that's an endless struggle of what are you – how do you convince someone to pay another $60, you know? But I don't know. Again, I just sort of look at the success of FIFA as the example there of marketing doesn't have to dictate. It should be the other way around, I guess. Or you should work in parallel rather than sort of having to adhere to one to the other. You know, why do you have to make new mechanics so they can put them on the back of the box? Like, well, can't they just find a better way to market what you currently did, you know, or can the marketing team come up with a more optimized way to find more people? I mean, Madden still just markets with TV commercials, right?
Well, yeah. Well, let me ask you a question, right? So I'm not saying this is right or this is wrong. So, you know, with Out of the Park Baseball, we got told by the guys making the game, here's what we've done. And then it was our job to figure out how to communicate that to people. Was it the same with Madden, where you guys tell the marketing department, hey, here's what we've done, kind of figure out how to way to do it? Or was it the opposite? Like, how did that work?
It's, well, Madden stuff, because it's coming from everywhere. But no, it was not like that. I mean, there was obviously, we had a lot of things that we wanted to do. And then there would be things that rolled in that you weren't planning on, you know, and that you now were part of the thing. Like, there were, I don't know, some right stick BS or something you had to do, right? It's just, or dynamic player rating thing or something. I mean, it's just like, name the features of the last, I don't know, 10 years of Madden and NCAA, right? They're just all over the place. And I love that the current guys are just like, no, the vision is this. This is gameplay, 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 right? But there's still the random things that I don't know why they're there, you know? Because they, the same problem, they're probably going to get cut in a few years when they add a few more. Whereas I don't see that in any of the other games. I can't think of any of the other sports games that have added major things and just like thrown them out, you know?
Well, I wonder, Ian, because you said, how do we get people to spend another $60 and buy the game? But isn't it now almost like, how do we get people to spend $200 on our game every year? So, so is there a different way they have to justify the product to people who are spending money digitally within the game on like the ultimate team modes? And then the very next year, you have to give them another reason to spend that same amount of money. I mean, it's incredible that people have come to accept that you just start over and just start spending money again like that year after year.
I definitely can't believe that people do it. But there's hardcore people just like
blame,
we talked about earlier.
I blame TJ Lowerman personally.
He's part of the problem, yes.
Yes. Yeah,
part of the problem. He's encouraging them. But yeah, I mean, it's got to happen soon. I don't know how long it can last that they don't switch to a platform model, that there's not just one Madden game, you know. And it is just updated, right?
Well, we might be seeing that with NBA Live.
Yeah, Live could be the first one to try it. But it's hard. Like, I mean, you're seeing all the other ones die off, like golf or I mean, college football had its own reasons. But any of the smaller market sports games can't sustain that $60 each year with a huge marketing budget.
It's tennis. Another example like you brought up earlier. Tennis is one.
And boxing. Trying to pile in new features. Yeah, boxing. So it's just like, it's bound to happen, and EA has some really smart things going on with the Ultimate Teams, you know, and some really compelling stuff. So it's just like, I don't know, it sort of sucks for a lot of people that this is the way that they've grown up, you know, playing and getting a new one each year in the shiny box, and they go at midnight. And but it just feels like that it's not antiquated yet, but it feels like it's getting there.
Well, I think one reason it's not antiquated yet is because sports is different every year. Like the real world of sports, I think there's a direct correlation to the fact that every single September we kick off a new NFL season, and every single April we kick off a new baseball season. There's no other correlation in the video game world to that, right? Like Call of Duty is an annual franchise because it can be.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be. Like Assassin's Creed is taking a year or two off, but for years it was an annual franchise. With sports, it makes sense, especially with team sports, and it doesn't make sense necessarily with things like golf, right? Or with auto racing. And you've seen those disappear from the annual release because it doesn't quite work. But with baseball, hockey, basketball, football, the annual release cycle ties in wonderfully to, you know what, it's a new season. My team might have stunk last year, but darn it, this year we're coming back better, or even better, you know, what, I mean, Brian Weed, you know what it's like when your team wins a Super Bowl. I still don't, right? How great is it to walk in, pick up the new Madden when your team won the Super Bowl 6 months ago? You got to be excited about that, well, right? Like, sports works for the annual release much more than anything else.
That's part of what I think also drives those ultimate team modes, though, is if you have a team that is down in the dumps, if you're a Browns fan, you're going to be able to piece together a team that you enjoy playing with, as opposed to playing with your team and getting slaughtered online, right? I think that's one of the other keys to it that keeps other people interested. And that's as a basketball fan who no longer has a team, you know, that makes it kind of hard to get excited for an NBA basketball video game, you know? So when you look at a my team type mode in NBA 2K, maybe that's where I want to end up investing my time. So yeah, there's different motivations, I think, for why people get excited for these games and based on the real world stuff. And these microtransaction based modes, though, also give you that daily update type of thing where you're getting ratings changes and you're playing an auction market and you're getting special cards inserted. So there's always something new going on there, as opposed to, you know, you play Madden. Go back a decade, you'd play Madden maybe a ton for the first month, and then maybe you start to lose interest in it.
I would love to know, and I don't think this information is anywhere except deep within the secure hallways of EA's team. I would love to know the percentage of people who buy Madden and then play Ultimate Team. And the percentage of those who play Ultimate Team that spend money on Ultimate Team. I would be willing to bet that even though it's a very vocal community, and let's face it, all of the buzz around Madden, you know, all around social media and on YouTube, it's all Ultimate Team, right?
Yeah.
It's if it ain't 100%, it's 95% Ultimate Team. I'd still guess, and Ian, you might have some sort of an idea, although it's been a while since you've been on the team. I would guess it's probably somewhere between 15-20%.
I have no idea what they have, but like I would guess that it's you're way more engaged players there. I mean,
that's
would imagine.
Right. Yeah. Yes, the ones that play are much more into it.
I would bet it's high. I would guess it's higher, but I really have no idea to know because it wasn't really a strong mode while I was there yet, but. I mean, I feel like that would be a really valid and killer feature set is if this year's game is got X, Y, and Z gameplay and the physics is super dope and all our animations don't suck anymore or whatever and we're going to be delivering killer content to you every day. Like, that just seems like, all right, I'll buy it, you know, as opposed to like, and we tacked on all these other things, you know.
Well, I mean, the statement that they are, I don't think it's recommitting, but they're committing to franchise mode again or dedicating more time. I forget exactly what it is, but that's an interesting statement from a marketing organization as well, right?
It's admitting that they weren't.
Well, yeah. I don't know.
All those years, they said, no, we still care about franchise.
I don't know if it's admitting so much.
That's the plight of every sports game marketing, right? That, like, you have to try and talk about how great the new year is, and they always, usually inadvertently, just like take a crap on the previous year. You know,
yeah, it's a renewed focus.
Last year, yeah, right.
I used to watch. You know, the NHL guys were. I even asked them about this. The NHL guys would get up in front of a room full of people and compare the animations of this year versus last year before the new game came out. They're like, look at how terrible this is. Like, this guy just skated right by the dude, but this guy walked up to him and smashed him in the face with a stick. How awesome is that, you know?
Can you believe you're so dumb that you liked last year's game?
You are
so bad, you know?
there were times, I remember, like, MLB 2K, they'd come out and apologize, or NBA Live and apologize, and some people would be like, well, we love that honesty, and other people are like, why, you just took $60 from me and lied to me for 3 months and now you're telling me this? Like, so it's a no-win situation, probably.
Yeah, it really is. Like, it's a lot of trust lost there if that's what you kind of have to resolve, which is NBA Live, that's that's another crazy topic altogether there. I don't, another trust killing move there, I would say.
6 years worth of it.
Yeah, right.
You know, so what would you, Ian, you know, if you were back kind of influencing Madden, you know, what would you do this year? Is there something is there an idea you have, or is there a certain area you would focus on to improve the game?
I would retire immediately. There was a weird time when FanDuel looked like it might close down, and I had like nightmares where I was in like Madden pitch meetings again or something. I woke up like sweating. No, not again. No, the thing I would do is not that different from what those guys are doing. Like, focus on the gameplay. I still have my pet peeve issues that maybe some people care about and maybe some people don't. I just think that like the actual physical engine of Madden still feels kind of like a band-aided Madden 06. Mm. It doesn't feel like football looks yet. There's just a lot of janky stuff. Like, it still plays a great game. It's fun. These are just pet peeves of someone that has analyzed motion capture and all the other things that maybe people don't care about. But if they said, "Hey, Ian, can you be a consultant for 3 months?" That would be the only thing I would care about, is physical motion of the players should be consistent with real life physics. I feel like they don't adhere to that a lot. I still see a ton of the animations, even in that super snipped trailer. Yeah. I see stuff that I captured 8 years ago, and you notice that they're not showing any blending in any of the clips between animations. It's just like, so they can add all the new stuff, and all that's right. The right approach. But
you got to explain what that means. You've got to explain what that means. They're not showing any blending of animations. Talk about that. I want to know what that means.
So you can go motion capture an animation, and it'll look perfect, right? Because that's exactly two athletes doing it. Like, so the Gronk video I watched today, where he's stiff arming the guy and he goes flailing away, or he's hurtling over the guy. And it just looks stunning. It's done in slow-mo. The new graphics, everything looks really great. I mean, Madden has come a long way, right? But they don't show him starting to run after it. And so there's always the magic there and it's an extremely complex technical problem that not many games have solved, which is adhering to the correct physical momentum and speed and acceleration that you were doing in the animation as you transfer that back into user control, or back into AI control. And so I look at a game like The Show, which basically tends to play like 10-second animation clips. Their animations are insanely long, so it looks extremely realistic. 2K did that a lot and still does that. NBA 2K. Mm-hmm.
Pro Evo does too.
Pro Evo does. FIFA is very blend heavy, and they've done a lot of work. And it's not as hard because the ball's disconnected, and it's still very hard, I shouldn't say. But it's not as challenging as football, I would say. With like all the different locomotion sets and all the different player sizes and all that stuff. But yeah, so I still see it in the game, when you come out of a catch animation in Madden, or a receive animation in NBA 2K, or it's all the sports games.
When you get tackled off the ball in Pro Evolution, now I've played the game so much, I know before the ball has even been separated from my guy, once he starts making a certain kind of motion, I'm like, oh, okay, he just lost the ball, even before he loses the ball. That's what you're talking about, right?
Well, no, not necessarily. I'm saying, like, it's hard to explain because it's technical without, like, visuals. But if a catch, let's say that I go tomorrow and I motion capture myself doing a catch animation, like, right? I jump up and I catch the ball and I start running. So during that move, I moved a certain amount of feet per second, or whatever you want to call it. I translated across a field of distance a certain amount. So that inherently has motion qualities to it. That has speed, that has acceleration to it. And when I leave that animation to now be back under control of the user, where I'm sprinting, or let's say I'm running towards the sideline and I need to cut up the field. Like, almost all the games that I've seen lose all that data, and therefore everything looks fake, because it's not following physical, actual movement. Like, the animation is driving the physics during that time. So when they blend in and out of those things, it's why you see suction blocks. It's why you see whatever you want to call it. The game feels like it goes slow for a second, then speeds back up. Hmm. Because the animation data is captured at a certain speed that it does not match the actual speed when they leave that animation, right? So, like, again, kind of hard to explain, but if you go play a game like Madden on PlayStation 2 or NFL Blitz, those are arcadey representations of it, but the physics was always consistent, because you can imagine it as your controller moving a cylinder around. You're not actually playing animations. You're just moving a cylinder. And then the animations are playing on top of the cylinder. And when all the kind of new games switch to animations now drive, your controller disconnects from what is actually happening, if that makes sense.
Yep, that totally makes sense.
So, again, that's what I would do. And people would be like, what are you talking about? You know, and you have to explain it to them, but you would show every single video and every single time people played the game that momentum is always preserved and acceleration is always preserved. And that would, in my opinion, make the game the best that it could be, because it would always adhere to what you expect is going to happen. There would never be receiver cut moves that happen at insane speeds that are used as exploits. There would never be suction blocks that happen when you're trying to run around the end and they warp and tackle you. None of that would happen because true physics would be modeled. So, yeah, that's what I would do. Hard problem. It would take a long time, but that's what I would do.
Yeah. You know, for me, I'm kind of looking at presentation this year, and that relates to franchise in a big part, just because it's been lacking that sense that you're within your own kind of franchise universe of everything that's going on. Yeah. So, you know, a ticker and you know, whether you have some kind of wrap up show for your league.
Highlights from around the league. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that, you know, and then also things like replay, you know, the cameras that capture replays, which currently there are many replays that you see from cameras that don't exist in real life, you know, on places on the field that they can't possibly be. And then commentary. No, they're probably not going to swap out Nance and Sims, but boy, you know, wouldn't a lot of people like that? Sims grates on everyone. Nobody wants to listen to him any more than they have to.
Who would you get?
He's not that bad.
And who would you get, and how would it be any better? I don't. That's one of those that, like, it feels like you could never win.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. I mean, commentary is a very difficult thing. I think you just end up, especially with the CBS crew, and Sims is off. I think they took him off the Thursday games this season, or at least some of them. But anyways, you ended up hearing him because they had two games a week last season. You ended up hearing those two so much that I think it just even added on a little more. But, Rich, what would you look for this year besides what we know about already?
Well, what would I look for, or what would mean something to me personally?
Yeah, yeah.
Hope for it. Yeah.
I really like Madden, and I have for years. I've been really as down on it as I got at the end of the PS3 Xbox 360 era is as positive I've been about it. I mean, Brian, you remember we were very pleasantly surprised with the debut version on the PS4 and Xbox One. And so, but again, I'm weird, right? Like, I don't play Madden the way that most people play Madden. All I do is play in our online league. That's all I do. Like, I don't play Ultimate Team. I don't play single player seasons. All I do is play
online. Rich, come on.
Don't do any of that stuff, right? I don't play Ultimate Team champions or draft champions or whatever it is. I'm not saying I don't play them because they're not good. Right, I play in our league because our league has a bunch of crazy people who we love to have fun and be silly and enjoy the game for what it offers, which, by the way, the online franchise that Madden offers is the only game that offers anything like it, right? So all that I would like is a way to make that better for a guy like me, which is I love to play the games, and I don't want to manage my team at all. I would love to be able to basically enter five or six commands and have my AI GM act on those. I want to say,
you're
hey,
the only
look,
person in our league, Rich, who didn't want to bother signing free agents for your
team. I don't care. I don't want to sign them. I don't want to deal with salary caps. Again, I get that they're part of the game. I'm glad that they're in there. I just personally don't want to deal with them. All I deal with all day long, is numbers and pivot tables. My whole life is making pivot tables. I don't want to have to do that in my game, but I get that other people do. So what I want to say is I want to tell my general manager, the most important thing to me is my offensive line. Focus all of my resource, or focus a lot of my resources on my offensive line. Hmm. The other thing I want to do is I want to get young, or I want to invest heavily in veterans this year because I want to make a Super Bowl run. Or you know what? I'm cool with trading down my top pick in the draft to try to get three or four players. Or like, I want to give strategies. Hmm. And I want to play the game. So I would just love it if I could set five or six strategic goals that would allow me to design my team without having to go in and try to search for a 27-year-old left tackle who has a pancake rating of X and Y. Like I don't know that if anybody has ever said that before, but me personally, I just let me dictate the strategy, then let my guy go out there, and he might or may or may not even be successful. But at least if I can see what the guy tried to do and acted on it, that's what I would personally love to see from Madden this year.
Ian, I'm crazy. Just hearing like you us three, like it just reminds me of how glad I am that I don't have to work on it anymore, because it's just because there's so many Madden fans that have grown up forever, and this is how it is. That like everyone wants different things from it, you know, like they want the hardcore thing, or they're like, you know, maybe you and me, Rich, we're getting a little older, we don't want to deal with all that crap, but we still like the gameplay part. You know, it's impossible to please everyone.
I was about to say in that these games now, we have fewer sports games than ever before, but they're so much deeper in what they offer, and they offer so many different experiences. You look at a game like NBA 2K, which has two different franchise modes. It's got two different cooperative online modes. It's got the ultimate team type mode. It's got its normal
Spike Lee.
the career story mode. I mean, and then you've got just regular play now online or offline. You've got shoot arounds. You got scrimmages. I mean, there's so it's absurd how much.
Amazing.
And so you're going to have percentages of people who never touch certain things. You're going to have percentages of people who concentrate in one area over the others, or in two or three. You know, that's got to be a really difficult thing to deal with now that maybe, you know, in the past wasn't as much of a concern.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still amazed that 2K can keep it all together. And Madden too. Like, it was just all these things. Mm-hmm. How do you juggle all these priorities? And I mean, that's why their teams keep getting bigger and bigger, and then why there's so many patches after launch. It's just because there's so many things that maybe you easily miss, or that are connected to each other and don't work right. I mean, I wonder, like, will there be a day where they start splitting that stuff off?
I always thought that was going to happen. I mean, for years I've been predicting they would do that.
Yeah, like, you know, Facebook finally, you know, said, hey, Messenger is its own app. And everyone was like, no way, man, I already have it. And then they did it, right? So I don't know. Maybe you could do that, that there's just a Madden career mode thing, or an NBA single player thing, and it's $10, or I don't know. But that's a scary move for a big company to lose the gamers that you think are going to pay $60.
You got to think at some point, though, in the next 5 years. I mean, do you think that 5 years from now, the landscape looks the same, you know, with whatever the consoles are, where you've got these, you know, the guys left standing, right? The FIFAs, the Maddens, the shows, the NBA 2Ks, right? Every sport has its one flagship game now. Do you, knowing how big they are, knowing the resources that go into not only making the new versions, but just keeping it all together.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a point at relatively soon where there's the tipping point where it does change, right?
Yeah, it's got to tip over, right? It has to. Too big, right? But I don't know. I mean, just like what you mentioned as you were talking about, I just want a game where I just, you know, answer some questions, you know, basically. Pick a tackle. I care about, you know, offense or, you know, like just, I was thinking, that'd be fun. You know, like that seems like a little thing that someone could compete with. Mm. And if you imagine that it was putting all of the other overhead away, like, I don't know how you even make a game for PS4 that looks any good. I don't know how you get an NFL license for less than a huge amount of money. But just putting all that aside, if someone like kind of hyper-targeted what they wanted, and we talked about this a long time ago, Rich, of the New Star Soccer experience of just
the best.
The one guy, and you know, in your case, you just like playing online franchise, but you don't care about the management. You just want to play your buddies. Like, so you know, again, putting all the other overhead aside, you'd think someone could make a pretty compelling game there that's $20, and then once all it takes is one of those. And then now everyone will start coming after the sports, right? Because they do last forever. They have the built-in fan base. Just like with horse racing, you know, people are probably going to start making horse racing games now. Even though they're not going to be big companies, people will start doing it. You know?
It won't be as good as yours, so you got that going.
Of course. But like that's sort of the thing, though. Oh, there is a market there. And so, you know, eventually when these games get so huge, but I don't know. Maybe they won't. Maybe it won't happen. It feels like we're heading towards a path where the Xbox One and PS4 have like 6 games a year on them. Mm-hmm. And then the rest are, you know, random downloadable side-scrollers or whatever. I don't know. But like when you look at Uncharted, I mean, it's pure magic.
Oh, my gosh.
And who can compete with that? No one. And so it's like, now consumers and gamers are like, why isn't this game as good as Uncharted, you know? Mm-hmm. And so just more and more games are going to get trimmed and trimmed and trimmed. You know, it seems like that, but...
Yeah, it seems like you've either got the quadruple A games...
Yeah, it's no longer triple A, yeah.
Right.
It's going to be 5A.
Right.
Yeah, yes. Right.
Either you're going all the way with multiple millions... Or you're the small, you know, indie game with the interesting art style and the slightly different take on a proven convention.
Yeah, you're No Man's Sky or something, you know, that's maybe the, or Firewatch, you know, something kind of off the beaten path.
Or Her Story, right? Or
Or Her Stone, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Well, there's also like the Rocket Leagues of the world now.
Yes.
Yeah. You see, that's another one, man. I would love to make a arena sports game like that. I would love to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think those are super fun, and I've always loved that couch multiplayer or the quick multiplayer. I love Towerfall. That's my favorite game in the last like 5 years.
But just like you said, Ian, like so, Rocket League has almost got the market covered.
Yeah,
because not only did they come out with a great game, but now it was just car soccer. But now it's also car hockey and car basketball.
Yeah.
Like, why would anybody try to do what they're doing when they're so good at what they're doing and they've got legions of dedicated fans who are happily paying them extra money for these things? This was a free game that everybody got for free and has probably
on
made
PS4. Yeah.
Right. I mean, so again, just like you said, right? When somebody gets it right, boy, it's hard to get it right. But once they get it right, it makes it almost. It makes it so much more challenging for somebody else to enter that fray.
Well, again, I think that what it does for hopefully other indie or smaller studios and people that maybe are a little more risk-taking is that they can see that genre is maybe a real thing. Whereas, you know, it felt like for years and years and years, all of us were talking about, well, the arcade sports genre is just dead, you know, and what happened? It's all gone. The NBA Streets and the Blitzes and... Mm. All those just vanished, and those were really fun games. I had a lot of great times playing those games, and they're all gone.
NBA Street Volume 2 might have been my all-time favorite game, other than The Bigs, which was another one of those games.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe people see, oh, okay, well, the Rocket League, that's financially viable for, you know, if you have a team of 5, 10 people or 20 people, or I don't know, whatever their size is. And so maybe more teams will come out with that sort of style. I mean, it's relatively easy to make I don't want to say easy. You still need an experienced team and all that jazz, but it's relatively easy to make an arcade sports game, you know, nowadays with all the engines, all that stuff, and be able to get onto the consoles comparatively to how hard it was in the past. And so, you know, if you think a 10-person team can get it together and make a new NBA Street, that seems like maybe that could happen now. You know, there's the appetite. It feels like Rocket League's proving that, you know, that sort of multiplayer arcade style thing is still there.
I actually think that's going to happen. I forget the name of it off the top of my head, but there's one coming later this year, maybe, or early next year. And it's essentially a sequel to an arcade free-to-play game that was on PC. And now they're expanding it to PS4. So there's also another unique one coming out in just a matter of weeks. It is called Dangerous Golf.
I've been following that. Yeah. That's a true. The Burnout guys, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's different ways people, you know.
That one I think is a stretch.
Yeah.
It's funny, but like, come on, man, who's going to really, who knows who's going to buy it? Maybe I'm wrong. I could be crazy, but that seems like a pretty big stretch.
You know, we'll find out. I appreciate at the very least companies trying.
Exactly. Yeah. Took the risk.
Exactly. Because we don't see that anymore, even from the EAs. Everybody's so risk averse that we're not getting arcade games from them, and we're not getting anything unique. Essentially, they're just stuffing things into their sim products, and you know, it makes those better in some cases, but also it's reduced the variety we have, which is unfortunate. So I just really want to thank both of you for coming on to the show. Rich, Out of the Park Baseball 17, is there still a code you can use to get a discount?
Darn right there is. Press 17, my friend, gets you 10% off. Just go to outoftheparkdevelopments.com. And click on the button there for Out of the Park Baseball. Get 10% off. You know, shameless shill, but it's true. It's the number one rated PC game 2016. That doesn't come from me. That comes from all the critics, all the people who played the game. We're very proud of it, and we're celebrating the fact that we are the top rated PC game. It's pretty awesome.
All right.
Congrats, Ian, man. That's pretty great.
Yeah. And Ian, Photo Finish Horse Racing, iOS and Android. It's free to play. It's becoming a big hit, so make sure you check it out. Ian, thank you for taking the time to come on.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, so you can follow Ian at Ian T. Cummings on Twitter, Rich at Rich Grisham. I'm Pasta Padre, Brian Weedy from Sporting News, Hit the Pass, and this Press Row podcast. So everyone, please take care till next time.